Welcome to the Millennial PhD, a podcast about creative survival and beyond. My name is Dr. Carmela Muzio Dormani, and I'm a sociologist, dancer, and creative consultant from New York. In these episodes, you'll find inspiration, ideas, and actionable tips for building new pathways forward in work and life. You'll hear from artists, activists, creative entrepreneurs, PhDs, and professional pivoters. We talk about radical humanity and practical steps to follow your dreams, even in the context of challenging social conditions. Before we jump into today's episode, a quick reminder to follow the Millennial PhD on Instagram and to please take a minute to rate and review the Millennial PhD on Apple Podcasts. Your rating really helps the show reach as many listeners as possible. You can learn more about me and get access to free creative resources on the Millennial PhD Instagram page or at themillennialphd.com. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Welcome back to the Millennial PhD, where we talk about art, creativity, and radical humanity in motion. So here we are, we're at the end of the semester, if you're on the academic year like I am, and like so many of us in academia are, and we have this special episode topic planned, which is this question of, is it time to quit? And so for everybody listening, this episode, it's sort of going to be geared toward academia, which is going through a great wave of folks quitting right now. But I think it's also really applicable to folks in different kind of professional environments who are going through this process right now about what does it mean to start to think about moving on. So typically this is meant to be an episode with just me. It's in between the interview episodes. I often just have these solo episodes. I'm Mella, your host, but I have two special guests here to talk through this topic with me. My two favorite guests, which is Carlos and Omar, who are also my co-hosts over at Play Hype Dialogue podcast. So Carlos and Omar, you want to introduce yourselves real quick?
We're Carlos and Omar.
We are one.
It is true. You can hear my voice coming out of the other one's mouth. Blah, blah, blah.
Okay, so Carlos and Omar are my two Play Hype Dialogue comrades and also academia comrades. And we will leave in the episode notes their contact info and everything so that you can connect with them elsewhere. But they're here to talk through this topic of, is it time to quit? Again, here at the end of the semester, kind of a challenging time. And I want to say, I guess, before we get into talking about it too much, that it's okay to step back and to be confused about this question, because I think for sure each of us who are in this podcast chat right now are, and I think a lot of people are going through this process, that it's like, is it grieving? Is it fear? Is it time to move on? Or are there things within the environment that can be fixed? I think a lot of us are working through those issues. And before we start jumping in and trying to give solutions to it, I just want to say that I think it's okay for all of us to be on the edge a little bit about this and to be going back and forth in that process for sure.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about this thing that's going on. They're calling it the Great Resignation. And then some people are saying there is no Great Resignation. It's the Great Reshuffling, or people are just looking for better conditions. If I want to put a positive spin on it, I feel like I could think about it as like a different kind of labor movement, right? If I want to be real optimistic here. And for us, so for each of us, we're each recent PhD graduates at kind of different stages of grappling with the fact that academia, for those who don't know, promises these potential kind of very secure paths forward in this tenure track professional trajectory of being an instructor, being a professor at a university, and then is often not able to follow through with that promise because the jobs are not there. And even when they are there, the environments are really toxic in many cases. So for anyone from academia listening, that's a familiar story to you, but just for anybody else who's popping in on this story. So me, Carlos, and Omar are at different stages in that. We're kind of wrapped up in it. And one of the things I wanted to talk about with you guys is the process of thinking about how do you know when to move on? Like, what is that process like? So for me, it's been a back and forth navigation, trying to think about, is it time to throw up your hands and quit? Is it time to straddle the difference? Or is it time to, you know, hunker down and push harder for academia? For me, one of the big ways that I've dealt with it throughout the whole PhD process, which I've talked about here, is straddling academia and the arts a little bit, and kind of having my foot in a few places and working on building skills that I knew could translate outside of academia and that were not just about peer-reviewed academic journal articles. So what do you all think? What is this process like for you at this moment? What do you feel comfortable sharing?
Should we, like, real quick kind of go over where we are at, since we are all at different positions? Like, for example, like me, I have a postdoc fellowship, writing fellowship. So that's a year-long thing.
Yeah, yeah. Talk us through that. So talk about where you're at right now, and then we'll loop through and come back to me and after Carlos.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's what I have. So that's my year, and then I've been on the academic job market and also the non-academic job market. And, you know, it's interesting because my fellowship ends in a few months. And so I then have to kind of see where I'm going to go from there. Like, you know, and I don't want to go into details about like the different options, but I mean, really there is this big whole debate of like, is it going to be academia or not? And I think one of the things is like, it's almost weird because I'm not quitting a particular job, but if I were to leave academia, it's almost like quitting a field in a way. So, you know, that's sort of what I'm going through now. And, you know, I'm also straddling the fence of like, you know, but like different options like academia, but also my consulting and also like art stuff and just kind of seeing what, I don't know, what fish bites the hook. That's not a phrase. I feel like there's
a up phrases left and right, so you might as well get in on this.
No, but I feel like it's supposed to be a phrase that I just messed up. Anyway,
it's close. It's right there.
Right. Someone will let us know in the comments.
Right. The tip of the fishing hook.
But yeah, Omar, and it's like a lot of what makes us feel that way is the idea and the reality. It's not. This is not just like a narrative, but the idea that with academia, they have it set up that if you step away, it's sort of like, oh, well, if you stop, if you have a gap, that's it, you're out. Yeah. Which is part of this like cult-like obsession that academia has.
It's like you're breaking up with someone and they're like, don't you ever come back. I never let an ex back into my life. Like, that's what it feels like academia is, that just sort of like one shot and that's it. And it's strange. And, you know, I thought like maybe it was just me, but no, so many people you hear that they're all like just terrified of even just taking a little bit of time to try something else, because it's like there's no way to go back. And they said like there is options, but it's like very rare, which is kind of when you think about it, you're like, why is it like, I feel like so many other fields, they kind of like let you come back in, but I don't know what it is about academia that it's like so insecure that like if you leave us, don't ever come back. Right. You know,
very toxic relationship.
Yeah, it feels like.
And Omar, you're someone who I admired, and I do admire, because I do feel like you have set your boundaries at certain points in your academia trajectory so far, where you said I can't rush these certain parts of my life to make it squeeze into like the shape that academia needs it to be in. So I felt that you did take your time at certain moments, or you did draw these boundaries. And then just for the audience listening, like you have quite a prestigious fellowship right now. And I just mentioned that not to be like, oh, like what up? But I mean, that's great. But I think a lot of people go through that experience as well, which is you can get a very coveted position, whether it's a postdoc with no teaching or a prestigious postdoc at an Ivy League or whatever, 1, 2, 3 year, even a VAP, whatever, you get these positions that you have to fight pretty hard to get in the first place. And they're again, they're prestigious, like they're competitive. Mm-hmm. But at the end of that process, you're still left going on the market again, basically.
Yeah. It was like a weird decision for me because I don't want this to come off as like me, like putting all my stuff out there and like bragging or anything, but I actually had to decide between the fellowship that I have now and another fellowship, and the other fellowship.
It's not bragging. It's just facts.
But the other fellowship was 2 years. The one I have is 1 year, but it was heavy, heavy teaching. Mm-hmm. The one that I decided to accept was writing and remote, so I could do it from home. And I just thought that it. And I remember I was talking to a mentor of mine. He was like, "It's kind of funny because I feel like other people would jump at the 2 year one, but I realized for me, and coming out of the end of this year, I know I made the right decision for me because it did give me some time to one. Kind of figure some stuff out, cast wider net, see what was going on. But, I also did want more time to work on my personal projects and instead of doing so much heavy teaching. And so because I felt like the other fellowship, it would have been me jumping completely into academia because in a sense, with such a heavy teaching load, it wouldn't have given me space to really explore like other stuff. And I think that was my biggest fear. And I remember another mentor told me, she's like, that teaching load is ridiculous. She's like, you're not going to have time for anything else. And I was like, dang. So it helped me decide of like, you know what? No, I'm going to go for the other thing. But thankfully I did have the other thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because I also know that sometimes what it is you only have one option and you just have to decide like, do I take this one option because it's the only one given to me? Or do I say no to that and really give myself sort of that space and time to explore something else that I won't have the time to do if I accept this one opportunity that I'm not that excited about,
Right.
And I think that's hard for people because you also wonder, you're like, what are people going to say? People are going to think I'm crazy. People are going to think like I'm making it. But then I kind of realized like I can't live for other people, Right. Like they can be crazy, but they're not the ones who's in my shoes,
especially because it feels like all this pressure, but it's like four people. Yeah. because the regular people don't know. Omar, so in a minute I want to hear from Carlos, obviously, but just while we're talking, Omar, I do want to follow up and ask you, how do you feel right now being on both the academic market and the non-academic market, or what we sometimes call the alt-ac or the non-ac market?
Stress. Because also this academic market was very long. Like I thought it was going to be kind of done in February at the latest. And there were still things that I could apply to up until April.
Yeah, COVID definitely shook up.
Yeah, I was kind of like, dang. But no, it's... I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It is not amazing. It's very stressful, but it's also kind of like, it's better to have more options than less, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things, first of all, not to like jump over and say, I hear you that it's awful and it's stressful. And the other day we were talking about some of the freedom and the fact that the non-academic market happens 12 months out of the year, whereas the academic market, for those who might not know, only kind of happens in one cycle typically. It's gotten longer because of COVID, but it happens usually in the fall or the early winter, and then that's it for the year. So it's very stressful, like you don't get something at that time period, whereas I do feel comforted by the kind of abundance that exists
in
the regular job market.
Yeah.
Okay, so Carlos, hey.
Hi.
let's talk, we'll go back to the core question we were getting at, which is just thinking through how to know when to move on. And I know none of us has concrete answers about that, but I know something you've been thinking about, the question of how long and hard do you fight to get into this one cult. And what is that process like for you right now?
Yeah, so for me, as the sort of last one to finish, it was a long road, in part because I was trying to tackle this question before I even finish. Like, is this what I want to do? Like, should I just quit and like cut my losses and go on for something else and just be ABD all but dissertation forever? It's a thing people do. Lots of people do it. Like, I still have the skills. I just don't have those particular letters at the end of my name. And so that's been something that I've been thinking about for a while. And it's tough. Like you've talked about in several episodes of the podcast thus far, like Omar was just talking about, it's a really rough game to play and to mm-hmm. get in and to stay in. There's no promises. Like, there's no promises in a lot of things. But academia has this particular way of making promises it know it knows it can't keep. And what we've seen with the last like 20 to 40 years with the sort of anti-intellectualism and the shifting dynamics of higher education, now with COVID, just so many things have radically shifted, and we're one of those generations that sort of smack dab in the middle of it. And so I think one of the first things is it worth it at the end of the day to continue to play in this game? The things that you want to do, if you want to write books, you want to write articles, can you do that outside of academia? Maybe you want to keep a foot in, you're still a member of your professional organizations. Like for us as sociologists, it's American Sociological Association, and then a bunch of others. For Omar as an anthropologist, there's AAA and a bunch of other associations given our specialties and subfields. What do you want to do with your life? Which is a terrible question.
I don't know.
Exactly. I don't know. I don't know either. But I know that being fully in academia is not it, just given its shifting dynamics and how things are moving and the expectations to, at a certain type of school, like a Research One institution, perform all this research in addition to your teaching and be expected to just do all the time, versus like a teaching school where you're expected to teach. And if you want to do research, that's not exactly the priority. So really figuring out where you want to put your eggs, like they can't be all in one basket. That era for academics is over. The good thing is, like you've talked about on the show this whole season, like Omar was alluding to, that we do have skills. It's about how we market them to the outside world. But deciding to make that commitment, even now you hear me, I'm like, oh, keeping a foot in, keeping a toe in academia. Right, yeah. I'm not fully saying and have it yet, be like, I'm done, it's over, I'm out. Even if sometimes that's where my mind is, because it is a very difficult pursuit and I could start somewhere else in a non-academic job and make as much, if not more money, and have weekends off. And it's just a different sort of lifestyle that it's tough. It's a tough conversation. I'm not there yet. We're not there yet, but it is one that we have to consider, especially as millennials who now have PhDs. What are we going to do now?
It's hard to know. It's scary because you're like, this has been so many years of my life. And I think because we're all still technically young scholars, you know, we're all like recent PhDs. So it's almost like I don't know. I you kind of hear from people like 15 years in the game, they're like, you know what, I'm done. I'm over it. I'm ready to go. And it's almost weird to be like, me too. And they're like, why? You barely even started. You know what I mean? So it's.
You know what though? Yeah. First of all, I want to echo what everybody's saying. And it's just interesting hearing all of us talk, because the paradigm is so powerful that we're still in about the like, oh, the like certain version of research that we're just it's drilled into us that this needs to be like deified, like this needs to be the top most valuable thing. And it's drilled into us that way, because if we were not taught to see it that way, no one would logically put the time and effort into it to do it, because it's the returns are really limited unless you're playing in the tenure track game. Mm-hmm. Right.
Then this like kind of a superstar in the tenure track game. Like, you got to be, I see people who are killing it, the academic game, but it's because they're genuinely outstanding scholars. Like, their books are praised. Like, but it's also like, how many of us are going to get to that point? You know what I mean? You know, so I don't know. And then, yeah, you get this, I don't know. We were talking about this the other day, that you almost fed this lie that like, yeah, you just get in, then you get tenure, and then you're good for life. And then, you know, and then there's like a sabbatical, so you can like go constantly take off a year. And I remember I was like just telling them, I was like, I heard that, like, for example, sabbatical is not as common as I think we all initially thought. Mm-hmm. It seemed like, oh yeah, just something you get every few years, and then it's like very apparently quite rare, and you're like, wait, that's not what I was told. Also, like, summer's off, winter break's off, sabbaticals, like, right. Teach a class, do your research, like, you know what I mean? Like, so.
Yeah, for sure. And I'll say, because I didn't say before, I'll say that I'm in a permanent but non-tenure track position. So I have a long-term but non-tenure track job. And our sabbatical policy is, I think you're eligible for the first time after 7 or 8 years. And you can apply, but it's like definitely not guaranteed. Like, it's basically at the whim of whether or not your department needs you, which, spoiler alert, when there's 5 faculty members in each department, like, they need you. but it's also unpaid at my school, which is something else. They're like, you can get yourself funding if you can, but other than that.
I heard about that where you buy out your classes, where you basically the field, you have to like pay the school money so that you don't have to teach. And I was, but you still have to like maybe do service still. I'm like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, a lot of times you're still expected to do admin. So just to say, like, a lot of the things that they're part of the pact that a lot of people make. It's like, here, specialize in something really obscure. So a lot of times, spend lots and lots of years on it, do original research on it, become an expert in something that may or may not be applicable and useful. And in return, this is the job security, and this is the type of conditions that might be waiting for you. And there's just so many cracks in that now that it's almost obsolete. And I wanted to say, this is a little off topic now, but I just remembered that Omar's saying, oh, people who are like 15 years into, I guess, the full-time part of this profession, as opposed to us as early career scholars. That being said, like, we've each sunk 10 years, I think, into this training. And one of the things that I have been trying to say to PhD candidates, or even people I've talked to who are thinking about the PhD or who are going into it, is to say that, like, you are a sociologist as soon as you start that training and delve really deeply into it. And it's not to be anti-intellectual, it's just to combat this idea that we get that gets hammered into us, which is like, you don't count until this arbitrary committee of 4 or 5 people at the end says, okay, now you count, welcome through the gates, now you can be part of this. But it's like, I'm a sociologist, and I was a sociologist 3 years into my PhD program as well. Like, we were doing the research, we were doing the writing, we were doing the training, we were doing the teaching at CUNY, you know. Carlos, I know you jumped into teaching undergrad classroom your first semester in the PhD program. I started by my second year. Omar, I think you probably were the same as me, or maybe a little bit later, but either way, we were in
third year. Yeah, but I had a mentorship fellowship. So yeah,
but it's like, you're doing the research, you're doing all of the stuff, but you're not allowed to step into your expertise and step into your power with that until somebody until a council of people check that off the list for you. And again, council, I understand it's important to get qualifications for things, but I'm just trying to combat how powerful the narrative is that you don't count at all for 8, 5, 7, 8 years, 10 years of your life while you're doing this. And I just don't think that's accurate because we're part of the academia conversation, even at that stage. And now, advice I would give to anybody at any stage, and especially if you're a PhD student or a PhD candidate, is what Carlos and I, and I'm sure Omar as well, have said a couple of times, which is like, build your skills for the world, not for this academia bubble. That's got to be like the takeaway. If no one's asking me for advice, but
it's solid.
Sometimes people are, and when they are, that's the thing that I have to say. It's just like there's so much we can add to the world, not just because of PhDs, just as people with passions, whatever they are, and interests. So built for that, because this tower is crumbling. It's on its way down.
Right.
Please don't fire me.
Speaking of crumbling, so is my resolve, because your boy is about to finish fasting, so I gotta run. Love you both.
Oh my, thanks so much for your commentary. Do you have any parting thoughts, pieces of advice?
How dare you? And drank all day, and now you're asking me for more? Get out. I'm gone.
You're just like academia, extracting.
Just like academia.
All right, Omar, go break your fast. Thanks so much.
Ciao.
All right, Carlos. Then there were two. So let's round this episode out with a little bit of reflection. Maybe Carlos, first of all, if there's anything you've been wanting to jump in and add, feel free. And also, I guess I would like to talk through for folks listening, are there any kind of coping strategies that you feel like you've been developing as you go through this process of thinking about transition?
Mm-hmm. So like you said earlier, I have been teaching since the very beginning, which is something that some of the superstars that Omar was alluding to didn't necessarily have to do. They came in with fellowships, they had big monies from their department, were invested in from the beginning. And so I think one thing to think about is wherever you go, however you're moving through academia, are you being invested in? Are people valuing you? Because if they're not at the beginning, they're certainly not going to do it after you commit all this time and labor to your department or to your school. I do want to say that one of the things that helped me get through the PhD process was having my students. Teaching at CUNY, having the student body that CUNY has was really powerful to be in front of the room with students that look like me and my family and had all these varied experiences was really nice to see, and being able to be real and honest with them about academia and about the position of being an adjunct and sort of the struggles of that. But that only worked for so long because it is so grating and it is so draining. Which is why I understand these folks who have been doing it for 10, 15 years on the other side. It's a lot. It's a lot. So my students were definitely a balm and a salve, and have been. When I think about the part of academia I would want to be in, is more on the teaching side, to be able to continue to talk and engage with students. Outside of the student piece, one of the things that's really helped me navigate this process, as well as other things in my life, is my spirituality and my religion. I'm not going to get on my soapbox and proselytize to anybody here. But
next episode.
But I think it's important to have something to do for yourself, some sort of self-care. For me, my religion has a lot of facets that help me to move my body and engage my mind and tune out when I need to and tune in when I need to. So having that helps me to keep it together while I'm figuring all of this out and asking these big existential questions and these career questions as we figure out what comes next and how I want to move forward into that. Because what I do know is that doing it the way I've been told I should do it is not going to work. It's not tenable. It's not going to happen. So I have to do something different. What that looks like, I'm still figuring out.
So I'm going to extrapolate from what you said, and because a lot of it resonated for me, even though I don't have a religious practice, I have my creative practices. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of us, you know, we have our different things. And what I'm hearing from you, though, that resonates for me, and I imagine for other people, is find your support systems and your healing systems. That's yes. That first, you know. And I know that it's not always ready made for everybody. So if you're struggling with it, first of all, if you reach out to me and Carlos, if you want to talk to about it, our contact info is in the episode notes and we'll say it at the end of the episode. But build that community and build that support system in whatever way you can and put your healing up front, because what we learn in academia is that can wait. That mm-hmm. part can wait. That part can wait. And it's always for something, right? It's always that part can wait until the dissertation is done, or that part can wait until you finish this fellowship application, or until the proposal is done, or until the article comes out, or until mm-hmm. you get those edits back in, or until the grades are in. Like, and it is just a sick cycle of pushing and pushing and pushing. So that's another thing that I feel like as we're going through these processes of thinking about, is it healthy and right for you to stay here? It's like because, you know, staying is probably right for some people, right?
Oh, for sure.
So if you're going to stay, it's like those community networks and healing networks need to be built. And if you're going to leave, they need to be built. But we're mm-hmm. always denying that. And we're always putting that on the back burner.
Yeah. One of the things that the PhD programs tend to do is really push this independence, solo, because the dissertation, unlike most of the academic work you can do, is a solo project. Like, it's supposed to be just you. It's a sole author publication. You can have a community of scholars and you can work together and you can balance your workloads doing a book, doing articles. Like, there's ways to have your academic community, ways to have your creative community, your spiritual community. Like Mela, Omar, and I, with our podcast, we've deepened our relationships and have built a community where we're having this conversation together now. We also engage creatively with each other. There's so many benefits to having this. And if there could be overlap between your academic and your non-academic circles, all the better, because you have someone with perspective. Because for some of us, our people don't get it. They don't get the PhD process. They don't get academia because it's presented in the mainstream and through Hollywood in a particular set of ways that are often hugely inaccurate.
Carlos, let me ask you a question, and you can definitely decline to answer this if you want. You mentioned the other day something that I hadn't heard from you before, which was that you felt that there would be some disappointment in your life from some community members if you did not go into a traditional academic role. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that that's the case? And would you be willing to talk about it a little bit?
Definitely. There's definitely that feeling. And like Omar said earlier, like, I can't live for other people, but that pressure is there. I spent a decade of my life doing a PhD program. I got a terminal degree in a field, and I'm just going to walk away.
Everyone's
like, what was the point? But at the same time, had I quit during the PhD process before I was ABD, that would have looked a certain way, and that would have caused all sorts of interpersonal conflict. It's like, oh, after everything we've done for you, after everything you've been through, you're just going to quit. You're going to give up. And I'm like, this was, I'm not going to like go too into it, but it's a process. And if you're not one of those superstars, you're not one of those fully funded people, it's even more difficult. Having to teach the whole time made it more difficult to finish and to get out. We have colleagues who were funded and were done. We were still trudging through trying to get on the other side. So now that I'm done, it's like, oh, so what are you going to do now? How's the job market? How are things going? And I'm like, I'm figuring it out, applied to a bunch of stuff. Cause like you said, the cycle isn't like every other job market, in sort of the mainstream of US society. It's like, so you're gonna quit?
Also, like, just economically, as a PhD student, you give up all those years, however many years it takes you, you give up those years of like earning potential, right? Which is something that just like in strictly economic terms is, it's not great. You know? Yeah. It has long-term repercussions for sure. Sorry to be a bummer about that.
The student loan crisis. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no. I'll just say, I was going to say, I think both you and I, we were in the program together in the same years, and more or less. And we both flirted with leaving much earlier on at different times, multiple times throughout the program.
Yes.
Neither of us did. We made it through that. Hey. Would you go back and leave earlier if you could?
Whew. That's a tough question. I mean, I feel like it's kind of one of those things that with any sort of, like, I'm big into sci-fi, any sort of adjustment of the timeline has consequences you can't fathom. So like, had I left early, would I have invested in my creative process the way I have? Would I have started this podcast with, or started our podcast together? Would I have grown spiritually the way I have these last like 7 years? I don't know. I know that there would definitely be lots of benefits that I could see, like just economic to start. Like I could have gotten a job doing any number of things and made more money than I made the last decade of my life and had less student loan debt or paid off my student loans. Yeah, I don't know if I can fully say yes that I would. But
yeah,
maybe,
for sure it's a hard question.
Yeah, but maybe I would have advised myself to not put so much pressure on myself, to not be so precious about certain parts of the process and know that it is possible to walk away at any time, even though it's something that I'm still struggling with right now, that we're struggling. That's the point of this episode, to navigate those feelings and come to terms with them and figure out how to proceed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think for me, ultimately, even though it's not the type of question you can really answer, I think ultimately for me, I desperately wanted to leave multiple times and didn't. And ultimately, I do feel like I wouldn't go back and change that. Like I wouldn't go back and leave earlier. But the reasons why are not, oh, because I made it to the full-time job. Because it's clear to me in this full-time job that this is not sustainable, right? Even though it's an okay position, but it's clearly still precarious, and it's clear that it's got some deep-seated cracks and issues just systemically. But the reason I'm happy, I would say I can't go back and say, oh, I would do it differently, is basically because it allowed me to dance in a way that I'm not sure I would have allowed myself to otherwise. I think in early years, I would have, if I had left, I would have left and gotten a different job. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure I would have been able to go through the creative trajectory that I did and develop those skills that I built through that. So when I think about it, I do feel like the personal development that I went through in this time, I guess it's the same thing that you're basically saying, which is like, I can't say I'm happy with my personal development and I can't say what it would have been if things were different. So ultimately I'm happy I am where I am, but I do think there's many paths available for everyone. And I think for anyone who's a student and is in the PhD program right now, if you're thinking about it, if it's worth it or not, it's definitely, it makes sense to sit down and go through the process of thinking about what do I want and what am I getting out of this? Mm-hmm. And I also think a lot of people who are stepping away from academia right now are not so early career scholars, mm-hmm. who are deeply familiar with the cracks. And ultimately the question is like, can we continue to bear those cracks, or is it time to step elsewhere? I think a lot of us were hoping to do something impactful, right? Or something, mm-hmm. where you could mentor students or be supportive. And the question is up in the air if academia can be that place, even for people who get that ticket into it.
For sure. And I think, again, if you're at one of those moments where on the other side and wouldn't go back, but you have your whole future to look forward to. You have this crossroads, and there's going to be multiple crossroads. Maybe you take a semester off or you take a year off to go explore something. It'll be there. It's not going to be super easy, but if you leave academia will probably still be there. It might not be easy to come back, but you can. You can try if that's what you decide you want after leaving. You can always shift your direction. You can always pivot.
Yes, pivot. So I'm going to close us out with just some parting, just concrete steps forward. Because I know sometimes that it can be like, okay, great. Like I'm trying to figure out what to do. And all I'm going to say isn't even that fleshed out is, if you're at this juncture of thinking about stepping away from academia, no matter where you're at in this trajectory, there are, I feel like, an explosion of resources available right now. Mm-hmm. I want to say that I was very skeptical about the whole coaching thing for a long time. I've said this in other episodes, so if you've listened before, you've heard me talk about this, but I'll say it again. If it's within your means to hire either a career coach, if you're trying to do a career pivot, or like a personal coach or a creative coach or something like that, I do feel like I would recommend it, because having that accompaniment and that accountability can be really powerful. And if that's not within your means right now, because it can be unreasonably pricey, if it's not within your means right now, a lot of people there's free resources out there. So look for coaches, look for people who are newly doing career coaching, maybe have a lot of free stuff, or people who are very established have these kind of free resources available, or they do the first call free just so you can get to know each other. And there's absolutely no reason to not take advantage of those resources if you poke around the internet looking for them, even looking for kind of guides and resource guides about skills translating, mm-hmm. which is something that people talk about a lot, but it's so critical if you're going to pivot, which is the ability to translate our skills over into the language of wherever we're trying to go. And that can vary a little bit, but there's a lot of resource guides floating around the internet for that. Mm-hmm. So I would just say, like, you're not in this process alone, and to take advantage of whatever resources you can. I promised I would give our contact info, so you can connect with me on Instagram at Melamuzio, MelaMuzio. And of course, follow the podcast on Instagram at The Millennial PhD on Instagram. And you can connect with Carlos
at Carlos Creates 2018 on Instagram. And that's sort of my main place right now.
You know what? People are using LinkedIn. LinkedIn is like having a moment these days as well. So
it is. Update your LinkedIn page, folks.
Honestly, super important. But thank you so much, Carlos, for coming on to you and Omar for being kind of last minute guests. I thought this conversation would be more interesting with the two of you as part of it. And it definitely was. Do you have any final words?
Yeah, just adding on to what you were saying about coaching and the cost, given recent events in the country and sort of different movements finally getting platforms and money, there are some coaches that have specials for people of color, for queer folks, for women. So definitely in your browsing, if you check any of those boxes, definitely look for those options. Reach out. Talk if you have a community within your department, with your fellow students, with your peers, fellow instructors. That might be a nice place to start to just begin to think about these things differently, to get more perspectives than just the three of us today.
All right. Thanks so much. We'll see you in the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.
That's it for this week's episode of the Millennial PhD. You can find more content, resources, and information on Instagram at the Millennial PhD and at themillennialphd.com. In this collective moment of reevaluating our relationships with work and exploitation, I look forward to connecting with you and building stronger bonds of community and collaboration. I would love to hear from you via email at themillennialphd@gmail.com. with any feedback, comments, questions, or concerns, or if you're interested in coming on the show as a guest. That's all for now. It's been real. See you next time.